All right, welcome to the Old Time Dragnet Show. This is your host, Adam Graham, coming to you once again from Boise, Idaho. It's such a pleasure to be here and to get away from the news of the day to just enjoy this program and your comments and support. This show does not have any sponsor, nor does the next one. If you're interested, you got a product or service you would like to sponsor for the next episode, let me know. Email me, adam@adamsweb.us, or if you've got any comments on today's program or anything else, feel free to email me. Also, we continue to encourage everybody to leave their comments at Podcast Alley. We're currently ranked number 82 among all the fine podcasts listed there, and I encourage everybody to cast their vote once a month. Write Steve618J. Thanks again, Adam. This is my favorite podcast. You're the man. Well, thanks a lot, Steve, 618. I thought about doing a musical montage. Who's the man? Adam? No. But decided against that. Also, got an email, just a clarification. It turns out I pronounced Michael Galea, who emailed me last week, City. It's actually Calistoga. Calistoga, California is the correct city name. So, apologize. I mangled that a little bit. And he mentioned the book, My Name is Friday, and that actually is one I own, and it is, he recommended it, and it really is an excellent book, and I believe I've still got a review of it up on the site at the show notes site, dragnetradio.blogspot.com. And we also got, in addition to the comments on Podcast Alley, we got this from Lee Herman. He writes, Adam Graham, in his review of the show on TalkShoe, Adam Graham knows Dragnet and shares his knowledge in each weekly podcast. He is a joy to listen to and shares his enthusiasm for the show. Keep up the good work. And then M. Galea left another nice comment. Thank you, Adam, for bringing Dragnet Radio to us. I grew up with Dragnet on TV. I've heard some episodes on the radio before. Keep in mind, the radio run ended about 5 years, maybe less, before I was born. Anyway, thank you again. I hope to hear all the episodes you air. Thanks a lot, Mike, Michael. And, yeah, we will definitely do our best. This show, for reference, ended in September of 1955. So it ended more than 25 years before I was born. Wow, I have officially dated my exact age. But be that as it may. And we got a comment here on the blog from Michael Janascu. I probably pronounced that. Well, just Michael J. writes, thanks for putting on this podcast. I've been an old-time radio fan for quite a few years, Jack Benny being my favorite, and I've always had a soft spot for Jack Webb. And Webb actually, when he made his break into radio a lot, or into show business, it was writing school play sketches that were based in part on Jack Benny routines. So, interesting connection there. And then when Webb made his last appearance in a fictional role, it was a return role as Joe Friday in a comic sketch with Jack Benny. So, actually some relation between the two. My first memories of him were as a kid in the 60s. To my immigrant parents, as Joe Friday, he was the fixed and immovable pillar of all that was upright, decent, and good that they could cling to as they were buffeted by the storm of drugs, hair, and moral relativism that was the 60s. By the late 70s and early 80s, my college friends and I would watch Dragnet on cable, make fascist jokes, and howl at lines delivered with Friday's wooden yet somehow heartfelt and resolute deadpan, I've seen kids pull their own eyes out on a bad acid trip. I remember this line as a fact, though I've never heard it since. This was actually in a Dragnet episode from the second season, The Big Prophet, that is available at available over at hulu.com/dragnet, The Big Prophet. That's where the episode, where that line occurred. Now in my late 40s, and after working 20 years in the film industry, I've come to appreciate Webb not only as a pop culture icon, but as a very talented actor and producer. The range he displays, from happy-go-lucky Arnie in Sunset Boulevard, to the insanely hard-boiled Pat Novak, to the solemn, immortal Egyptian in the Escape episode of The River Trough, has given me a great deal more appreciation for the nuance and subtlety of the flat effect and deadpan delivery he gives the unflappable Joe Friday. That deadpan is so believable that until you see Arnie or hear Jeff Regan, you'd think Jack Webb was Joe Friday. Finally, I enjoy listening to these shows not just for the good writing and fine acting, but because it provides a foundation for the thousands of cultural references that anyone who grew up in the 50s, 60s, or 70s felt as part of the warp and weft of the culture at large. I remember Dragnet references or parodies in everything from the Three Stooges to Rocky and Bullwinkle, Stan Freeberg and Dean Martin shows, etc., etc. During any sitcom from the 60s to the 80s, if two plainclothes detectives showed up at the door, there was a better-than-even chance a Joe Friday reference would arrive with it. Thanks for putting in the hours and providing context for the show. I'm happy you do them live. And don't let anyone tell them you need to work from a script. Anyone can work from a script, but not just anyone can work on the fly and bring passion for the material and a bit of folksy charm with them. This you do. Good luck. Well, thanks. That means a lot, Michael. And you're right. It does provide a lot of historical reference. So much appreciated. Kind comments as we get started. Now, I'm going to caution you as we get into this episode. The audio at the beginning is kind of rough. There wasn't much I was able to do with it. And part of it's mainly the kids' voices in there that are kind of soft. And the one thing I've observed is you hear this better if you've got headphones in than if you're playing it over, you know, a loudspeaker. Like if you're driving in your car listening to it, it may sound a little bit more muffled than if you're you've got your earphones plugged into your iPod and you're listening to it. So just a word of caution there. This episode, The Big Children, is one of Webb's compelling themes throughout his career at Dragnet. And we'll talk about that a little bit after the end. But let's go ahead. We've been a little long. And be sure to listen to the end. I left in the last commercial break, but it's with a reason. You'll want to hear what comes after the cigarette ad. So let's go ahead and listen to The Big Children.
Fatima Cigarettes is proud to bring you its prize-winning radio program. Winner of a Motion Picture Herald Fame Award. The story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to Juvenile Bureau. You receive a complaint about an 8-year-old boy and his sister. A neighbor reports they've been going from door to door begging for food. Supposedly, the children are from well-to-do parents. Your job? Investigate.
Documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Tuesday, April 27th. It was overcast in Los Angeles. We were working a day watch out of Juvenile Bureau. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Captain Kinsling. My name's Friday. I was on the way back from communications. It was 4:38 p.m. when I got to 1335 Georgia Street, second floor, room 14.
Hi, Joe. Been waiting long? I was just checking the record.
No, I just got here.
What's this thing all about?
Well, just what I told you on the phone. 7-year-old boy and his sister covering the neighborhood begging food. You ready to go?
Let me put this away first.
Kid's
supposed to be from a wealthy family, huh?
Well, wealthy enough to live in the best part of Bel Air, yeah.
Doesn't make much sense. Must be some kind of a gag, huh?
No, not according to the neighbor who called in.
Yeah?
He says the kids are half-starved. Ben and I got in the car and drove out Sunset Boulevard to the Bel Air district. We pulled up in front of a large two-story home near the corner of Brookline Avenue and Knightsbridge Drive. It was a white frame colonial mansion set back in the middle of well-landscaped lawns and gardens. The other homes in the neighborhood were just as large, $50,000 and up. It was the last place in the city that you'd expect to find neighborhood children begging food. 5:20 p.m. We went around to the rear entrance of the colonial mansion as we'd been instructed on the phone. We located the woman who'd called in the complaint, a Miss Jeanette Bajon. She was employed as laundress and cook by the owners of the house. She was busy fixing dinner.
They're from next door, officer. The children. As I said on the phone, a boy about 7 years, a girl 5 years old, I guess.
Which side do they live on, Miss Bajon? The house on the corner?
No, the other side. Up here. The brown and white house, just up the street next door.
Mm-hmm. Are the children there now? Do you know that?
No, but they were here this afternoon again. Here to the back door asking for something to eat. I don't understand it. Something must be wrong.
Well, have they been around often, Miss Bajon?
Two or three days. Maybe 4 days. First, I thought they were fooling. They were not. I gave them some cookies, sandwiches. They were very hungry. They ate them like they were starving. The little girl saved her cookies. She took them with her.
How about their parents? Are they home?
Excuse me. What's that? Yes, that's better. No, I haven't seen the mother the last 2 days. I understand they are divorced. The mother, she lives there with the children. The father, I don't know.
Well, what's her name, you know?
Kester. Madame, the woman I work for. She said there are 3 children in the Kester family. But I don't know. I've only seen the 2, the boy and the girl. I would go over and see what is wrong, but I do not know the Kester. It is not my place. That's why I called you, officer.
All right, Miss Bajon. Well, thank you very much.
Not at all, officer. You understand, I do not mind giving the children food. Well, I think only something is wrong if they don't get it at home.
Well, thank you very much for notifying us. We're going to check into it.
Just a little curious, Miss Bajon. What set you making?
This? Napoleon.
How's that?
Napoleon. You know, Napoleon, pastry.
Oh, yeah. This smells good. Well, thanks again.
Certainly, officer. If there is anything I can do, you will let me know?
Yes, ma'am, we will. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you very much.
It's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
Those Swedish women make pretty good cooks, don't they?
I don't know. She sounded French to me.
Huh? Maybe so. Most good at cooking, huh?
Yeah, the brown and white house next door. That must be it, huh?
Yeah, that name, Kessler. He's fairly prominent around town, society.
I don't know. There's quite a few of them. Could be. Any way you look at it, it's hard to figure, isn't it?
Kids have been at it for 4 days. It's on the level. They really must be in a bind.
The garage door is open back there. No sign of a car.
Kids' bicycles, though.
Let's try the front door, huh?
Yes, sir.
Hello, son. Your name's Kessler, is that right?
Yes, I'm Richard. My mother's not home right now. Maybe you can come back tomorrow.
Well, we're police officers, Richard. If you're not busy, we'd like to talk to you for a minute, is that all right?
Yes, sir. That'd be all right. Would you come in, please?
Thank you. Richard Kessler was a blonde-haired, wiry boy, polite, well-mannered. He told us that he was 8 years old and he attended the neighborhood grammar school. He showed us back to the kitchen where he was warming a can of soup that he borrowed from a neighbor. It was a large house, richly furnished, but it hadn't been cleaned for weeks. Dust was piled up thick on the furniture, and children's books and toys were scattered around the rooms along with scraps of dried bread, half eaten. The house was cold and musty. On a small bar in the dining room, there were 3 half-filled cocktail glasses and a plate full of cigarette butts. Evidently, they'd been standing there for days. On the sink in the kitchen were a few pieces of stale bread and an open bottle of milk that had turned sour. Next to it were 6 empty whiskey bottles. dress except for the shirt that he had on. Looks as if he'd been wearing it for a week.
What did you want to talk to me about, Oscar? I haven't done anything wrong.
Oh, we know that, son. We'd just like to find out how you've been getting along.
Well, I've been getting along all right. 2 A's and 4 B's on my report card last month.
Mm-hmm. Where's your sister, Jess?
Judy, she's down the street. She'll be back in a minute.
How about your mother? First thing.
She's out, too. She'll be back.
When do you expect her, son?
Pretty soon. She's coming back pretty soon.
And your sister, Judy, she's younger than you are, isn't she, Jess?
Yes. Judy's only 6. I'm 8.
Any other grown-ups live here with you besides your mother?
No. Mom takes care of us. She'll be back pretty soon.
We'd like to have you tell us the truth now, Dick. How long has she been gone?
I don't know. Probably important. She's been here a long time. She can come back tomorrow. She'll probably be here then.
When was the last time you saw us, huh? Son, how about that?
A couple of days ago.
Mrs. Kears, do you mean she left the house Sunday?
No, before that. Last Friday night she went out. Said she'd be back. I don't know.
Did your mother say where she was going, Dick?
No, her boyfriend was here. No, I don't know his last name. Mom went out with him at a party, I think. I don't know. She'll be back all right.
Did she leave anyone to take care of?
No, we can take care of ourselves. Somebody fixed the cooking, though. I don't know how yet. I go look at the steak on the stove.
I'll take care of it, son. Go ahead. Sit down.
Has your mother ever left you like this before, son?
Maybe once or twice. She never stayed away this long, though. I don't know.
What's the matter, Dick?
Well, Johnny, officer, my little brother. He hasn't eaten much for a while. He's been hungry by now. I was fixing the soup for him.
Yeah, well, where's Johnny?
He's upstairs in the nursery. He's been sick with a bad cold. Mom knew Johnny was sick. That's why I wondered. He hasn't come back yet. I don't think Johnny's feeling good.
Do you want to take steps for him, sir?
Yeah, all right. You want?
Beth, you want mine?
No. How long has Johnny had this cold, Beth?
A couple of days before Friday, before Mom left.
Mm-hmm. How old is he?
Johnny's just a little kid. He won't be 2 years old until the last. I've been wondering about him. Talked a lot at first. Been giving him milk and cookies. That's what Judy and I had. I don't know.
Has the doctor been to see Johnny?
No, I thought of calling him. I didn't know the doctor's name. I was waiting until Mom got home. Oh, this Jim's in here.
Mm-hmm.
In the crib, officer. That's my brother Johnny.
Mm-hmm. Pretty cold in here.
Yeah, let's have a look. Hello.
Hi, Johnny. You hungry now?
No. Look at his eyes.
Yeah. I'll get to a phone doctor and ambulance. Tell him to hurry,
right?
Oh, what's the matter, officer? What about Johnny's eyes?
He'll be all right, Dick.
Oh, he's been acting awful quiet, though. Hardly moved around at all. Most of the time he's jumping up and down his crib like anything.
Has anyone at all been in here to see him since Friday?
Yes, ma'am. My sister Judy and I. We changed his diapers and give him something to eat.
Okay.
I sure wish Mom would go home and I'd like to talk to her.
Yeah, so would I. 5:48 p.m. We put in a call to the office for a policewoman, and then we got in touch with Lieutenant Lee Jones at the crime lab, and he sent out a man to photograph the condition of the Kessler home and the building. The doctor and the ambulance arrived, and little Johnny Kessler was taken to the general hospital in critical condition. The 22-month-old boy was in a coma. Richard Kessler and his sister Judy were taken to Georgia Street Juvenile Bureau and then transferred to Juvenile Hall and placed under protective custody, Section 700 sub B, Welfare and Institution Code. The two of them were given a bath and something to eat. Judy Kessler was interrogated separately by a policewoman. Ben and I talked to the boy, Richard. After a few minutes, he broke down and admitted that his mother had gone off and left the three children alone on at least half a dozen occasions. He told us his parents were divorced. He rarely saw his father, but his mother had had 2 or 3 boyfriends at the house during the past year. He also told us his mother drank quite a bit.
But she's never been gone this long before, Sergeant. Maybe she's out somewhere and has no way to get home.
You'll find her all right, son. Don't you worry about it.
Well, this boyfriend of your mother's, Dick. His first name was Larry. Is that all you can tell us?
Yes, sir. I don't know his last name. Are you going to keep us here all night, Judy and me?
Yes, sir, Dick. So don't take good care of yourself.
Where'd you take Judy?
Well, she's just next door, Dick. You can see her in just a minute now.
And how about Johnny? I always take care of him. He's fussy around Stingy.
Well, they've got him over at the hospital, Dick. They're going to take good care of him now. You can count on that.
I don't know, officer. I better see him. He might get all the fussy.
All right. We'll fix that up for you. Do you have any relatives in Los Angeles, son? Aunts, uncles, anyone like that?
No, just my father, but I don't know where he lives. Well, we had a nurse who used to take care of us, Mrs. McIntosh. She was still. My mom's fired her.
Oh, how'd that happen, do you know?
No, I'm not quite sure. Maybe my mom was busy. Mrs. McIntosh got mad at her. It was a big fight, and mom fired her.
Oh, now, this Mrs. McIntosh, do you know where we can find her?
Yes, yeah, I do.
How about some of the other boyfriends that your mother had, Dick? Do you remember any of their names?
No, one of them was George something. I don't remember the other one.
Joe, are you married? Yeah, Matt. You want to stay with the boy, huh, Dick? Yeah.
Hospital phone. A lousy thing.
Well, what's that?
The Kessler boy, little Johnny.
Yes?
He just died.
John Albert Kessler, white male American, age 22 months. All the pertinent facts and data would be listed on the crime report. And if and when the case was closed, the report would be filed away. Wouldn't be any different from 1,000 other dead body reports. Same size, same color, same number up in the left-hand corner. In the course of 10 or 20 years on the job, a police officer sees a lot of them. Most of them he forgets. Few of them he never forgets. The next morning, the body was posted to the county morgue. It was found that the youngster had been suffering from malnutrition, but the cause of death was listed as a basal skull fracture. Homicide detail was notified. The search for the mother, Mrs. Jean Kessler, went on. We talked to her neighbors, all of her friends that we could locate. We checked out an address book that was found in Mrs. Kessler's effects at her home. We got out a broadcast and an APB. No luck. Thursday, April 29th.
How about the youngster's brother and sister, Ben? You think it could have happened that way?
How do you mean?
Well, we were taking care of the little fella. They might have had an accident with him. They're afraid going up to
him. I don't think so, Joe.
Well, that's not very likely, Matt. We talked to him quite a bit last night. A couple of pretty honest kids. Pretty sure that they wouldn't lie about something like that.
Where does that leave us, the mother?
Good possibility. You know, maybe he's cast a drink quite a bit. He could have lost patience with a little boy. More chance of an accident there.
I get it. Funeral Friday. Yeah, Bert. Thursday? Uh-huh. Right, thanks. Yeah? Woman answering Miss Kessler's description checked into the hotel down on South Hope last night.
Still registered?
Well, she checked out earlier this morning and found a woman's sport coat in the room.
What about?
Blood stains on it.
You are listening to Dragnet. For the step-by-step solution to tonight's authentic case history.
Friday, April 30th. We were still without a lead as to the whereabouts of the missing mother, Mrs. Jean Kessler. The blood-stained coat, which had been found in the South Hope Street Hotel, was shown to Mrs. Kessler's friends and to her children, Richard and Judy. They identified it as belonging to the missing woman. Routine investigation of the hotel room failed to uncover any further leads. We got out a supplementary APB, and then we started rechecking with the Kessler woman's friends and acquaintances. Nothing. We rechecked a dozen taverns and cocktail lounges that she'd been known to frequent. No sign of her, no sign of her boyfriend. In rechecking her personal effects, we found a canceled check payable to their former nurse, Mrs. McIntosh. The endorsement carried her address. We checked it out. She'd moved. We traced it to the forwarding address. There we were told that she had a new job as a nursemaid with a wealthy family living in the Los Feliz district. We called there and talked to Mrs. McIntosh, and she told us that she was just leaving the house with the three children for an outing at the park and the zoo. We made arrangements to meet with her out there, 1:30 p.m. Ben and I located her at the head of the path leading through the main part of the Griffith Park Zoo.
I read about it in the paper, Sergeant, about Johnny. I didn't know you wanted to talk to me. I would have called in if I did.
We're still trying to locate the mother, Mrs. McIntosh. Can you help us out there at all?
Well, I don't know. Have you asked at those places she used to go to all the time, where she used to drink?
Yes, ma'am, we have. It couldn't help us. Did you know any of Miss Kessler's boyfriends, the ones that had come to the house?
Yes, I knew all of them. Donald, don't you wander off now. Same for you, Patsy. You stay close.
The boy, Richard, he was telling us about one of the boyfriends, ma'am. Fellow named Larry?
Oh, yes. Donald, you heard what I said. You stay close. Yes, I knew Larry.
You remember what his last name was, now?
Yes, Bartell. Some kind of an actor in the movies, I think.
Bartell. You know where he lived?
No, I think he had an apartment in Hollywood. I wouldn't know the address.
What kind of a man was this Bartell? I mean, his temperament and things like that.
Well, I think he was kind of lazy. I think Mrs. Kessler was giving him money.
Mm-hmm. Did the two of them ever argue or have any fights?
All the time. He had a terrible temper.
Did you ever strike Miss Kessler?
Yes, I saw it happen several times. Not too close to the cage, Donald. Back a little.
How did this Bartell act toward the children, Mrs. Messenger?
Indifferent, I guess. They annoyed him sometimes.
Well, that was after that you had the argument with Miss Kessler?
Yes. It was about her drinking and her boyfriend and all the rest. I just got sick of it and I told her what I thought. She didn't want to admit she was getting old, not caring for the children, pretending she was still in her 20s.
Well, do you have any idea where we might locate the father?
Well, they're divorced, you know. He's a head salesman for a lumber concern downtown. He inherited most of his money. I have the name of the company at home. You can have it if you like.
Yes, ma'am. We appreciate that.
That's the children I feel sorry for.
Yes, ma'am.
Two beautiful children. That poor little Johnny, I just can't understand.
What's that?
How could anyone desert a helpless baby like that?
We'll ask his mother. Friday, 5 p.m. Mrs. McIntosh called us at the office and gave us the business address of the missing woman's ex-husband, Richard Lane Kessler. We called there, but they told us Kessler was away on a week's vacation. They had no idea where to contact him, but he was expected back in a few days. We called Central Casting and asked them to check their talent list for a bit player by the name of Larry Bartell. They had no such name listed. Saturday, 8 a.m. The Kessler children, Richard and Judy, remained in the custody of juvenile authorities. The search for their mother continued. All day Saturday, Ben and I ran down what few leads we had. They went nowhere. Checks of the morgue, the city hospitals, and the drunk tank at the main jail still failed to turn up the missing woman. We checked again at the different drinking places she used to patronize. No one had seen her. 5:30 p.m., we went back to the office.
A lot of mileage today.
Yeah, there's not much to show for it.
Not going to be much fun for those Kessler kids this Sunday.
Why? What do you mean?
First Sunday in May.
Sure.
Mother's Day.
Oh, yeah.
Hi, Mac.
Hi. Got a piece of news for you.
Yep.
The Kessler woman's boyfriend, Larry Bartell.
What about him?
He's been located.
When he'd seen his name mentioned the previous night in the newspaper stories concerning the case, Larry Bartell had contacted the office to let us know that he didn't consider himself a fugitive. At least that was his story. He called just a few minutes before we got back to the office. He left word that he could be found at a Wilshire address all day Sunday. In the meantime, he'd be at the Spotlight Club, the club for theatrical people located in West Hollywood. 6:25 p.m. Ben and I located him at the club back in the billiards room. He was tall, dark-haired, dressed expensively.
I told the cop when I called in, you weren't supposed to contact me. This is important.
That little Kessler boy is dead, Bartell. We think that's pretty important.
Well, I didn't know anything about that. You didn't have to interrupt me. That's an important man I was playing with. Now, what do you want to know?
Where's Miss Kessler?
Well, why do you ask me? I don't know.
You're a pretty good friend of hers. You were the last person to see her.
Well, it was a week ago. We went to a party last Friday night. I haven't seen her since the following Monday. Last Monday. I'm through with her anyway.
What do you mean?
I just got sick of her, that's all. Pawing all over me, asking me to marry her. I just got sick of it. It wasn't worth it.
You accepted money for her?
Just to tide me over. She had plenty of it. Why not?
Where'd you last see her?
Keep your voices down. I wouldn't like this stuff to get around the club.
Yeah.
There's a hotel downtown on South Flower. I can give you the address.
Were you at another hotel with Miss Kessler last week?
Yeah, on South Hope, around 9th Street, I mean. Oh, that's where you found the code, huh?
You've got an explanation for that?
Blood stain? Sure. Crazy thing. Well, I threw her, then she tried to hit me in the bar and cut herself. Well, I didn't. It just wasn't worth it, that's all.
I guess you can prove everything you're telling us, huh?
Of course I can prove it. It's the truth.
And what about the little boy? How'd that happen?
I didn't have anything to do with it. It wasn't my fault.
Well, how'd it happen?
No, it was up Friday night just before we left the house. The old lady and I were downstairs having a few drinks. She put the little kid to bed, but he wouldn't stay there. He was getting up out of bed and running downstairs crying.
Yeah, go on.
Well, he finally took the kid, gave him a good spanking, threw him back in bed. I think he hit his head in one of the posts of the creek.
Why didn't you do something about it?
Well, I told her, but she said it was nothing. Didn't matter. Got a coat's knife, that's all. Kids are all right when we left.
You mean all the times you and Mrs. Kessler went out, you knew those children were being left all alone in that house?
Oh, what out of cheese, the mother, not me. Now, look, I gotta get back. I kept that game waiting on.
No, just a minute. It's gonna wait a little longer. Come on. Larry Bartell was taken downtown and held for questioning on suspicion of 702 WIC, contributing to the negligence of minors. He gave us the address of the hotel where he'd last seen Mrs. Kessler. Ben and I checked it out. It was a typical cheap downtown hotel with a bar opening off the lobby. The desk clerk told us a woman answering Mrs. Kessler's description was registered in a room on the second floor. They had an old-fashioned player piano going full volume in the bar. The sound followed us up the stairs.
Tenants here sure must like their music.
Yeah. Back to there, isn't it? 216?
Yeah.
What is it? Who are you?
Police officers. I'd like to talk to you.
I haven't done anything. What do you want with me?
I want to talk to you about your children, Mrs. Kessler.
But I didn't do anything. Donnie was sick, that's all. I didn't do anything.
That's not what Bartell says.
Larry, have you seen him? Is he coming back to me?
You better get up, lady. Get your coat.
I gotta have Larry back. He's everything to me. I love him. Is he coming back?
You've been gone over a week. Aren't you a little worried about your children?
Well, I'm too young to spend my life on children. I need Larry. Where is he?
See if you can find a coat, will you, babe?
Yeah, all right.
I've been drinking all this. I felt terrible.
Yeah.
I need Larry so bad. He's young like me. I love him. I gave him all my love. Gave him every bit of it.
Yeah, you gave him too much.
What?
You didn't have any left for your kids.
The story you have just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
On July 2nd, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 87, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial. Now, here is our star, Jack Webb.
Thank you. Friends, if you're with us week to week, you've heard me say, in Fatima, the difference is quality. It's a difference that you can prove just by buying a pack and smoking them. You'll find Fatima's extra mild, with a rich, better flavor and aroma. Stop in at the store in the corner and buy a pack of Fatimas the first chance you get. You'll find in Fatimas, the difference is quality. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to take a moment to thank all of you for your very fine response to our program, Dragnet. Since the first show went on the air about a year and a half ago, your cards and letters have been a constant source of encouragement and guidance. In the field of radio presentation, we felt that we were attempting something a little different, and we were not altogether sure that it would meet with your approval. Possibly, we were sure that our approach to this type of presentation was a sound one, but the final approval had to rest with you. If we may judge by your response, you've placed Dragnet high among the programs that you enjoy most, and for this we're indeed grateful. We tried to bring you, first of all, an adult program worthy of the 30 minutes that you spend with us each week. We've tried to bring you an honest and authoritative report on the work of your police force. We've tried to bring before you documented police cases that were informative as well as entertaining. In forthcoming weeks, we sincerely hope that Dragnet remains one of your favorite shows. Your letters have been read by all members of the Dragnet production staff. So if you like to listen to Dragnet, it's because you, our listeners, have helped to guide us in presenting the kind of entertainment that you want. And for this, our thanks.
Mrs. Jean Kessler was filed on and found guilty in Superior Court, charge of manslaughter. She was sentenced to 1 year in the county jail and deprived of the custody of her children. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. technical advice comes from the office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet, fortune transcribed from Los Angeles.
Now stay tuned for Counter Spy, then it's Screen Director's Playhouse on NBC.
All right, welcome back. A few things here. You'll notice the big theme here in this episode is a child abuse. This was something that Webb did over and over again, as he did Joe Friday and Dragnet. The very clear message, if you go through Dragnet, not just in this episode, but you go back even into the 70s episodes, he tries to send this idea that child abuse is a serious problem, it's got to be dealt with, and the big thing that stands out here is that it can happen anywhere. I think a lot of people, when it comes to child abuse, we still have the expectation it happens in trailer parks, it happens in poor areas of town. And Webb basically takes a show and says, let's talk reality. It happens in this very rich neighborhood. You have kids begging for food and children being neglected by their mother. And so this seems to be a driving passion here of Webb and of Dragnet, that this is a story that keeps coming up over and over again as you follow Dragnet. And of course, the end. This is, I think, the class of Jack Webb, where he's had a huge success, and he really, he goes ahead and he comes out and he gives, you know, this short minute and a half oration, thanking the listeners of the program for the success of it. And Webb, I think, really felt a connection to the American people, to listeners, to viewers, that they were the ones he was ultimately responsible. They were the key to his success. And perhaps in today's day and age, some Hollywood stars might pay lip service to the idea, but Webb, I think it was really something he believed. And what he said about letters was something to note as well, where he said that the letters were read over by everybody. And Webb really, he took those letters extremely seriously. It was chronicled in the book, My Name's Friday, by Michael Haney, that he assumed, and he had pretty good reason for this, particularly in the era before you got into large groups of people having, organized mail campaigns, like you'll have, everybody send a complaint in about this show. He had, if that's not the case, his idea is that for every letter he received, there were 10,000 people who felt the exact same way, but didn't bother sending off a letter. And so if he got one letter, you know, that means something. If he got 10 letters saying the same thing, that would indicate it's time for a change in production, because he wanted to be responsive to the people of America. And so he would actually, one thing he did is when he brought back the 1960 show, some of the standards on television had changed a little bit, and he used some mild swear words, and he got some response on that. So as a result of those letters, he actually went ahead and said, okay, this is not something our viewers want. So he went ahead and cut it out. It was a very, he was somebody who listened attentively to what people had to say about his production. The letters were truly important. He wasn't exaggerating that one bit. And of course, at this point, he is, he's 31 years old, and this is, 30, going on 31, and this is really his first big success in the entertainment business. I think it's just something saying you wouldn't see it happen today, because we'd rather fill in commercial time, but this was, Jack Webb, and this was the time. So, Okay, this wraps it up for this episode of Dragnet. We will return next week. For now, this is Adam Graham signing off.